Welcome to Around Town. I'm your host, Pete Ritter. On this week's show, we have Conrad Carpenter, a former astronaut, talking about what he's been doing in the 30-odd years since his early retirement. We've had some difficulty getting Mr. Carpenter on the phone, so I'll take this opportunity to fill you in a little on his background. I have a little biographical information here on Carpenter. He was born in Jackson, Michigan in 1936. After a relatively undistinguished high school career, he went to a local college and studied drama. He helped his father occasionally in a small engine repair shop. At some point, it's not really clear when, he decided that he wanted to be an astronaut. At the time, however, there were no astronauts, outside of the ones conjured up by Ray Bradbury, H.G. Wells, Arthur C. Clarke, and other authors. He started attending classes on aeronautics and sought to join the military. He was rejected from the Navy, and again, the reasons are unclear, so he sought out North American Aviation, a company that was building aircraft for the military, and was employed there as a machinist. He distinguished himself as a brilliant troubleshooter and wound up specializing in cooling systems for engines and turbines. Ultimately, this would be his ticket into the astronaut corps. Finally graduating from Jackson College with a BA in mechanical engineering, Carpenter began to take flying lessons. After becoming a test pilot for North American, he felt he was ready to become an astronaut, and by this time such an occupation had come into existence. So, okay, I see. Is he on? All right. We have on the phone. He's not here yet. We're having some trouble establishing communication with Mr. Carpenter, so please be patient. He was chosen in what is known as the Third 13, the group of astronauts selected after the beginning of the Apollo Lunar Exploration Program. As everybody knows, the last couple of missions to the moon were canceled due to budget cuts. Carpenter was tentatively scheduled to be on one of those missions, and there were even rumors that more missions were going to be added in the mid-70s. But the Apollo program ended with Apollo 17 in December 1972. Leftover Apollo hardware was used in Skylab and the Apollo Soyuz missions, and by the end of the 70s, the space shuttle was almost fully developed. Astronauts were becoming more anonymous, and space was getting closer. However, Conrad Carpenter's trip was just beginning. Although he settled in Hazlet, Michigan, and by all accounts hasn't left the town since 1974, Carpenter continues his life as an astronaut. Maybe you've seen him at the store or the movies, or maybe you've hired him to fix your riding lawnmower or paint your closet. You know, he's that guy who gets around in a spacesuit. That's right, a spacesuit. In case you haven't heard of him, if you're new to the area, or maybe if you've been in a coma, I'll introduce you. And if you've always wondered why there's a man in the spacesuit at the McDonald's, keep listening. I have now on the phone former astronaut Conrad Carpenter. Hello.
Good morning.
I don't know if you heard my little introduction, but I just wanted to confirm a couple of things. First, you were born in Jackson?
Jackson, Mississippi, though, not Jackson, Michigan.
But now you live near Hazlet, isn't that right?
No, that's correct.
Tell me, Mr. Carpenter, is it true that no one knows what you look like because you only go out in a spacesuit?
Well, I think some people might know what I look like. You can go to the library and see some pictures of me from the old days, I guess, but... yes, mainly I like to interact with people through the suit, mainly.
And why is that, if you don't mind me asking?
It's a complicated question. I guess the quick answer is that I'm still doing my part to advance the cause of exploration and trying to use my skills to promote a certain ethical and patriotic outlook.
What's ethical and patriotic about walking around in a space?
I don't mean ethical in terms of it's good to walk around in a spacesuit and not bad necessarily. What I mean is that I'm choosing to present myself to the world in a certain way and be consistent and responsible about it.
Okay, I want to back up a bit. Could you talk a little about your decision to retire from the astronaut corps and describe what it was like to have your mission canceled?
Well, you have to understand that although it was a long time ago, it was a defining moment in my life, I not only wanted to be an astronaut, I had decided to be an astronaut. The climate in those days was very different, and we were all relatively young, and we all had a deep commitment. Everybody who was chosen had a certain area of expertise or was assigned oversight of a part of the program. I had studied a lot about heat transfer and cooling systems, and so I got the job of overseeing the development of the environmental control systems on the spacecraft and for the suits. Other guys were involved in things like navigation systems, propulsion, geology, docking, areas like those. And so we all looked after the contractors who were building these things because it was thought quite correctly that if we had a hand in it, we would make sure that things were done right. So this gave us a lot to do, a lot to think about, but it also gave us a common goal, and at the same time, it was very personal. I was deeply committed to going to the moon. For 5 or 6 years, I trained for it. I supported the program that was sending the guys there. I was living and breathing that goal. When we got the news that Congress was pulling the plug, we were all disappointed. Like I said, it was a common goal. But each man saw that particular event in his own way. Some were excited to move on to the next challenge, the space stations, looking at the Mars mission, that kind of thing. Some were interested in more terrestrial things, you know, politics, upper level management, golf, you know, I don't know. But for me, it came as kind of a shock. I had never even thought for 1 minute that I might not go to the moon. Others were more cautious, but that seemed unnatural to me, and I was a bachelor for most of that time, so I was caught up in it. I hadn't even given a moment's thought to what would happen after I got back from the moon. I guess I thought I'd just get ready and then go again or something. So I was completely devastated. I cast about for a while, trying to take jobs in the astronaut office or put myself into running for a Skylab or something, but I started to feel like maybe my life was really over. I wouldn't let myself do a mediocre job, and I felt like I couldn't get my all the programs, so I just got out. It was about the time that I got married for a little while.
For a while?
Yeah, it didn't work out.
Where did your spacesuit come from?
Well, this suit was the one that was made for me at that time. We all had three suits each, one for the mission, one for training, and one for backup. This here is the backup suit. I have a lot of spare parts, and I've remade some things over the years.
Remade things? Well, let me tell the listeners, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you're in your spacesuit now and talking to us through its communication system.
Yes, the radio in the suit, that's correct. But you see, the suits really represent the state of the art at the time, and some things were developed just for the spacesuit, so no one really knew how long they would last. They were just supposed to get the job done, you know? Consequently, some of the rubber parts have degraded, some of the fabrics have worn away, metal oxidizes, and so forth. So I try to reconstruct things as best I can.
Does NASA help you with that?
No, they don't. Well, when I left the program, it wasn't considered any big deal. It was sort of a souvenir, that, like used surplus equipment. Really, later on, though, there were problems because they didn't like their image used in a way they can't control. Then the ownership was debated some, but they finally relented.
Why do you think they relented?
I think they thought I was nuts and they didn't want to have anything to do with me, but if there was going to be this big fight, they'd have more difficulty disowning me.
You still sound sore about it.
No, I'm really not. It's really just a difference of opinion, of outlook.
What's the difference?
Well, it's kind of like I said before, astronauts are a group of people. There really are no individual astronauts.
I see. So did you have the idea that you were going to spend a lot of time in the suit when you retired, or did you start wearing it later?
it took a long time till I realized what I should really be doing.
Can you talk about that realization?
Sure. You know, what I went through is not all that uncommon, not even for astronauts. Most of the guys that went to the moon came back changed in some way. Many of them became more spiritual. It was a time, I guess, also, but you have to understand that there were all sorts. We were technicians. When you subject a technical person to these kind of sort of heretofore unknown experiences, you never know what you'll get. And when those experiences stop, it becomes easy to see changes in the man. He might become a poet. I guess at some point I decided that the most important thing I could ever do in my life was not going to happen. I tried to accept this realization that the way I accepted any other piece of information, but it was too big for me. It took a long time to sort that out, but what I did was I tried to reassess what I had done to get ready to go to the moon. I've been putting everything I had into my training. I asked myself whether or not that training could have happened if there were no moon to go to at all. Let's say, you know, like if I could train that hard, devote myself so deeply to something else. I tried it with my marriage, but you really can't do that to another person. I realize you can only do that to yourself. So then I asked, what could I do? I asked, could I do it to something like starting my car? Could I learn everything there is to know about my car so that when I went to turn on that key, I understood not only the engine, the ignition system, the battery, and so on, but the key itself, you know, what it was, where it came from, how it was made, the physics of it, and then by extension, you know, my fingers, and then my arm, and, you know, all my head, my brain, everything, could I live my life as though everything mattered? As though everything added up to a fantastic journey that had never before been undertaken.
Could you?
Yes, sir.
And so you started wearing the suit?
No, or not yet. I was working out a way of dealing with the world around me, as if it was always new, always compelling, fascinating. But by this time I was barely scraping by monetarily, you know, I had sort of forgotten how to be really productive with all my navel gazing, so I was doing what I'd done as a kid, really, fixing things for people. I began to really love doing that, but I wanted to try to communicate that to other people. I knew the whole moon landing thing meant something to everyone, so maybe if I use my old souvenir, I could inspire people about the world around them. I thought if I presented this otherworldly thing to them in the context of unclogging their toilet or building the Purple Martin house or something, it might expand their outlook like mine has been.
I just want to remind our listeners that you're listening to WJAS, and I'm speaking with Conrad Carpenter on Around Town. So how much time do you actually spend wearing the suit each day?
I pretty much wear it as much as another man would wear a business suit, you know, at the office.
Can you describe for our listeners what the suit is like, how you put it on, what it does for you, what it keeps you from doing?
Sure. The suit is technically known as the EMU, or Extravehicular Mobility Unit. The history of the spacesuit is pretty interesting and actually pretty long, but in the interest of brevity, I'll just say that this particular model is known as the A7LB, which means it was for the Apollo missions made by International Latex Corporation out of Delaware, and it's the second variation of that garment. It's really several suits. First, pretty much first is what's called the liquid cooling garment, which is like long underwear lined with rubber tubes that have water circulating through them, and that keeps body temperature as low as is comfortable. inflated. It's really a beautiful device at this level because it's not only tailored, but it's also adjustable, so the length of the arms and legs can be fine-tuned and so forth. It also has all these metal connectors for the bubble helmet, gloves, the air and water connections, communications, air transfer. Actually, that reminds me that under this layer is a sort of diaper, which I don't wear anymore since I'm not confined to a spacecraft. I afford myself that luxury of using our gravity-assisted toilets. Then outside all of this is the integrated thermal micrometeoroid garment, which is that's the white covering that people normally associate with spacesuits. At this level comes the EVA gloves, the boots, the helmet with the gold visor, and strapped on the back is the PLSS, or Portable Life Support System, which provides air and cooling water to the suit through hoses. Also back there is radio, which you're hearing me through now. And then on the front of the suit is a remote control unit, which allows for regulation of the air and temperature and communications. Let's see, there's a few other doodads here and there. The cuff checklist, which I keep updated with my daily mission plan, and pressure gauges. Pretty nice watch. Inside the suit, there's a sort of a straw I can get a drink, and there's even a little pocket in here for a snack bar. The suit's really kind of like the smallest piece of architecture you can imagine, like a form-fitting spacecraft, or even a tiny world shaped just like yourself. It has everything necessary to sustain life and operates over a range of about 400 degrees Fahrenheit. It's pretty bulky, and it restricts movement quite a bit, but these things will be less problematic on the moon, of course. After working all day and the thing, you can get pretty tired, but I've adjusted to that challenge.
Doesn't it make it more difficult to do these jobs, these tasks at GSA are so important to you now?
Oh, on the contrary, it makes me have more respect for them and pay more attention to them. When was the last time you sat and contemplated how lucky you are to have so much air to breathe, for instance?
I see your point, but I mean, on a more practical level, doesn't Mrs. Jones get impatient when your limited dexterity keeps you from getting her gutters cleared?
Well, what happens when someone hires me is kind of a give and take type of thing. They have needs which get met ultimately, but because I treat the job as a mission. But they get more than the gutter cleaning. They get an education. They don't hire me because I'm the only one who can clean gutters. They can see me coming, if you know what I mean. In the end, the experience is worth more than anyone really expected to begin with.
You were talking about some of the astronauts that had gone to the moon. They went on to become priests or motivational speakers or members of boards of directors or Congress. Why didn't you decide to share your revelations in a more public, or rather in a larger scale, if you know what I'm asking?
You mean, why did I go down to the Science Museum and hang around on Saturdays or go teach at some university or something?
Yes.
To be honest, I don't really know. It's almost like I just decided one day this is how I was going to do it and never felt wrong about it. I spent a lot of time in here and it just seems right to me. I couldn't deliver a lecture in this suit because my audience would take me seriously. I couldn't go to school to mess around with kids in the air because the novelty of the suit wouldn't be enough to penetrate. I really think the doing of these menial sorts of jobs is necessary for the meaning of the suit to sink in. You need to deal with people on one-on-one for a while. Let them get over the suit and come back to it after they've had time to reflect on it. I really feel like it's working.
So that's also why you remained in this small town?
Well, I know the place, and it's so flat here, and there's this kind of uniformity that this place needs me. Imagine it's a little like the moon here, you know?
What's a normal day like for you?
Every day is different. I sleep in a hammock, sort of like the ones used in the lunar excursion module. I get up as early as I can. I have a pretty regular exercise regimen, and I try to eat well. I often have a site I need to visit, perform a few tasks. About the middle of the day, I come back home where I work on some of my my experiments. Then I come back out again, and in the late afternoon, try have to do something, you know, tie up loose ends. And in the evenings, I try and catch up on some housekeeping. Have a couple of hobbies.
Oh, what are those? And what are the experiments you're doing?
I create little movies related to space exploration, and the experiments are to do with radio, free energy, archaic technology, you know, trying to build a better computer, a better motor, that kind of thing.
What are the little movies like?
I've never finished one. I shot a lot of scenes, like lunar landscapes with explorers traversing them, simulations of 1/6G. I do it to pass the time, mainly.
You film them?
Videotape, it's cheaper.
But, so, when you're walking down the street, going to a job or getting lunch or something, what do people do when they see you?
There's a broad range of reactions. Generally, there are three types of reactions. You can't count the people that have seen me a few times or people I've worked for, but always had one of these three types of reactions when they first saw me. There's probably 15% of the people I don't see whose reactions could be different, but I'd say there are 85% of them. Are these three types. So the first type of reaction is that they see me from a distance and they just stare real hard till I get fairly close to them. I think they're trying to fit me with some image they've seen before, but not in that particular context. Sort of like seeing a movie star or something. The second reaction is startling or scaring somebody. I make sure now to take kind of a wide track when I walk around the corners of buildings and the like, because I can really scare people. I think it's because the suit makes me a little larger than most people, and also you can't see my face. You know, you just see yourself distorted in gold, sort of in my visor. So it can be startling. The third reaction is sort of my favorite, and I get it most from teenage boys. That is, they ignore me. They see me out of the corner of their eye or from a distance, and they just make up their minds that they aren't going to give me the satisfaction of making them respond. They just willfully reject me. But the behavior looks the same as willful acceptance. You know, I take advantage of this sometimes, like when I'm riding the bus. I just sit down and or stand real close to these people and study them. You know, they can't see me looking at them, so it looks like we're ignoring each other. But in reality, we're very curious about one another. It's kind of fun.
Has that ever gotten you in trouble?
No, actually, I have occasionally had conversations with people that way. For me to be able to hear well, the person has to use this walkie-talkie setup I carry with me, and sometimes it's more than they want to do. But if they're willing, we both enjoy it. I've never had any real trouble. People hardly make fun because they're so perplexed by the sort of seriousness of the suit, even though I might be hauling a bag of groceries or something.
How do you repair your suit?
Over the years, a lot of things have worn out. Actually, I've remade almost all the systems. For instance, cooling. The thing was made, of course, to operate in the vacuum of space, which is somewhat different from Hazlitt, you know. So I adapted the heat exchanger with some automobile parts. The radio's crapped out on me a few times, and I've repaired it in ways that sort of diverge from the original specifications. Resold the boots. Like that.
And you do all this yourself?
Yes, it's my mission. My mission. I guess I could say that. It's my mission.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Conrad Carpenter, I really want to thank you for speaking with us on Around Town today, and I hope we can have you back sometime.
Oh, thank you, sir. I'm glad to do it.
Conrad Carpenter is an astronaut who lives in Hazlitt. He's available for hire, but you have to be ready for an education. This is Pete Ritter for WJAS. Please join us next time for Around Town.